Today is Friday, January the 9th, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Following ICE murder of Renee Nicole Good, Trump officials threaten mass repression. By Jacob Cross and Joseph Keyshaw. The murder of 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good by an agent of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, is generating growing outrage across the United States and around the world. The wanton, daylight execution of this mother of three encapsulates the criminality of the Trump administration and the Gestapo-style agents it has deployed in cities throughout the country. On Thursday afternoon, in Portland, Oregon, Border Patrol agents shot two people in broad daylight. While information is still coming out, according to dispatch audio obtained by local news, a caller reported that ICE agents had shot him and his wife. As in the Good killing, the Department of Homeland Security justified the attack with the stock phrase that the driver had weaponized his vehicle and attempted to run over agents. At the same time, the Department of Homeland Security is deploying more than 100 Border Patrol agents to Minnesota, drawn from operations in Chicago and New Orleans. In one incident, earlier this week, in Minneapolis, following the murder of Good, DHS agents were involved in a car chase that ended with a crash outside a school, just as classes were being dismissed. ICE has denied using chemical agents, but video evidence confirms the use of tear gas, and at least one teacher was detained before being released. The conscious and deliberate character of Good's killing is underscored by the open and unapologetic defense of the murder by Trump administration officials. By hailing the killing, Trump and the coterie of fascists in the administration are making clear that it was an expression of official government policy. Everything coming out of the mouths of administration officials is a lie, and everyone knows it is a lie. On Thursday, Vice President J.D. Vance held a press conference in which he slandered Good and praised her killer. He called the federal agent's actions legitimate, and denounced the media for talking about this guy as if he's a murderer, adding menacingly, "Be a little bit more careful." According to Vance, "When you look at all angles of that video, it is very clear that her vehicle went right for the guy. She actually collided with him, and that's, of course, when he fired his shots." But tens of millions of people have seen the video, which shows the exact opposite. As the New York Times, Washington Post, and Guardian have all concluded, the footage shows that Good was trying to escape from a mob of federal agents when she was shot. There is no indication in the video that the ICE agent was ever in danger, let alone rammed by the vehicle. The car was moving away from the agent when he raised his gun and fired three rounds at close range. The Trump administration is seizing on the murder of Good as a pretext for a sweeping escalation in the criminalization of political opposition. Vance announced the creation of a new assistant attorney general position that will answer directly to the president. Asked about his message to far-leftist agitators, Vance declared, "Now they have an assistant attorney general who is going to prosecute and investigate their fraud and their violence more aggressively than it has ever been investigated." Vance accused a group of left-wing radicals of using domestic terror techniques to oppose the government's immigration policies. He never referred to Good by name, instead smearing her as "that woman," a deranged leftist who was brainwashed. He insisted the killer was protected by absolute immunity, denounced the local investigation into the murder, and he declared, "The unprecedented thing is the idea that a local official can actually prosecute a federal official with absolute immunity." Vance's threats come amid the increasingly open assertion of dictatorial executive powers by the Trump administration. Buried in the extensive coverage of Trump's interview with the New York Times, published Thursday, Trump reiterated his willingness to invoke the Insurrection Act and deploy the military in cities throughout the United States, including the federalization of National Guard units. "So far," he said, "I haven't really felt the need to do it." In an extraordinary statement, Trump declared that he operates outside of any legal constraint. Asked whether there were any limits on his ability to strike, invade, or coerce other nations, Trump responded, "Yeah, there is one thing, my own morality, my own mind. It's the only thing that can stop me." He dismissed international law outright. "I don't need international law," and made it clear that he would be the sole arbiter of any legal constraints. "It depends what your definition of international law is." While these statements were made in the context of foreign policy, they apply equally to, and indeed are inextricably connected to, the theory of dictatorship within the United States itself. As the murder of Renee Nicole Good demonstrates, it is asserting that the president has power over life and death, that a US citizen can be murdered in cold blood, and her killers defended and praised. While leading Democrats have issued insincere statements in response to the killing of Good, their main concern is to contain the explosive growth of opposition within the United States. The murder in Minneapolis follows a year in which Trump systematically advanced a conspiracy for presidential dictatorship. Throughout this process, the Democrats worked to suppress opposition. In response to the mass No Kings demonstrations in October, they capitulated to Trump by ending the government shutdown on his terms. Just 3 months ago, Bernie Sanders praised Trump's immigration crackdown, declaring, "We should have a secure border," and stating Trump had done a better job than Biden. At a press conference Thursday, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries were asked if they would use their budgetary powers to rein in ICE. They refused to answer. As Politico wrote, "The House and Senate are currently negotiating the bill that appropriates money to the Department of Homeland Security, which requires 60 votes. But Schumer and Jeffries did not commit to using the appropriations process as leverage. In fact, the Democrats will do absolutely nothing because they represent the same class interests as Trump. Last year, Democrats joined Republicans to pass a bill that exploded the ICE budget to $170 billion, making it one of the largest paramilitary forces in the United States. The trade union apparatus, for its part, has issued perfunctory statements that combine rhetorical outrage with a call for passivity. The Minnesota AFL-CIO declared it was shocked, heartbroken, and angry by the killing of Good. But the union bureaucracy makes no call for action, instead placing its faith in the state's Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and pleading for calm. The Trump administration wants to provoke Minnesotans. Do not give them the opportunity. Popular outrage over the ICE killing is mounting. In Minneapolis, a memorial at the site of the killing has become the epicenter of continuous vigils and demonstrations, with over 10,000 attending Wednesday night, despite sub-zero temperatures. Protests have since spread nationwide, including in New York City, Columbus, San Antonio, Tucson, Portland, and many other cities. More protests are planned in the coming days. In opposition to the passivity and complicity of the Democratic Party and the trade union apparatus, workers and youth must advance a program rooted in the strength of the working class itself. The demands raised by the Socialist Equality Party in its statement of January 7th outline the basis for a genuine struggle, the arrest and prosecution of her killer, the immediate withdrawal of all ICE, CBP, and DHS forces from Minneapolis and every city, the abolition of these Gestapo agencies, the release of all detainees, an end to raids, renditions, and deportations, and full legal rights and protections for all immigrant workers and their families. These demands cannot be realised through appeals to the political establishment or moral outrage alone. They require mass social struggle. The logic of events is driving toward a general strike, a coordinated intervention by the working class across every industry to bring the machinery of repression and exploitation to a halt. To organise this, workers must build rank-and-file committees in workplaces, neighbourhoods, schools and hospitals, independent of the union bureaucracies and Democratic Party operatives, capable of uniting workers across industries and borders. At the same time, the fight to defend democratic rights is inseparable from the fight against the capitalist oligarchy that stands behind Trump. It must be directed toward the construction of a mass socialist movement to put an end to dictatorship, repression, and exploitation. Declaring, "I don't need international law," Trump moves to seize more oil tankers in the Atlantic. By Andre Damon. US President Donald Trump asserted unlimited presidential powers to wage war all over the world in an interview with the New York Times published Thursday, declaring, "I don't need international law." Asked what limits exist on his powers as Commander-in-Chief, Trump replied, "Yeah, there is one thing. My own morality. My own mind. It's the only thing that can stop me." Trump made this assertion of unlimited presidential authority 5 days after US forces launched drone and missile strikes on Caracas and other Venezuelan cities, killing 100 people, before special operations forces kidnapped President Nicolas Maduro. Since the attack, the Trump administration has threatened Cuba, Colombia, Iran, Russia, China, and even the European Union, declaring its intention to use military force to seize Greenland from NATO ally Denmark. On Tuesday, Trump announced on Truth Social that the US would seize between 30 and 50 million barrels of Venezuelan oil, worth up to $3 billion. This oil will be sold at its market price, and that money will be controlled by me as President of the United States of America, Trump wrote. The Times interview was published as the US Navy pursued oil tankers linked to Venezuela, Iran, Russia, and China, fleeing the Caribbean across the Atlantic. On Wednesday, US forces seized 2 more tankers in international waters: the Russian-flagged Marinera in the North Atlantic between Scotland and Iceland, and the M. Sophia in the Caribbean. The seizure of the Marinera was a major military operation. The tanker had been escorted by Russian warships after a Russian flag was painted on its hull and registered with Moscow. The US mobilized P-8 submarine hunting aircraft, AC-130 gunships, and F-35 jet fighters to support Coast Guard forces boarding the vessel. A direct clash between US and Russian forces was avoided. The US Navy is now pursuing additional tankers that sought to escape the illegal US blockade of Venezuela, with vessels fleeing hundreds of miles into the Atlantic. Any actions taken by Venezuela's interim government are going to be dictated by the United States of America, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt told reporters in Washington on Wednesday. Energy Secretary Chris Wright, speaking to a Goldman Sachs conference in Miami on Wednesday, declared that the US would oversee the sale of Venezuela's oil indefinitely. Trump's threats span the globe. In his interview with the Times, he reiterated his threat to use military force to annex Greenland, a territory of NATO ally Denmark. He refused to say whether he valued Greenland or the NATO alliance more. "It may be a choice," he said. "Ownership is very important." On Monday, Leavitt confirmed that utilizing the US military is always an option in seizing Greenland from Denmark. The threats against Greenland have provoked sharp responses from European government. German Foreign Minister Johann Wadephul told reporters in Lithuania on Monday, "Since Denmark is a member of NATO, Greenland will, in principle, also be subject to NATO defence." On Tuesday, Denmark's military intelligence service classified the United States as a security risk for the first time. The same day, the leaders of France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Spain and Britain issued a joint statement with Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen, warning the United States they would not stop defending the values of sovereignty and territorial integrity. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier, speaking at a symposium late Wednesday, issued the sharpest condemnation yet from a European head of state. "There is a breakdown of values by our most important partner, the USA, which helped build this world order," Steinmeier said. "It is about preventing the world from turning into a den of robbers, where the most unscrupulous take whatever they want, where regions or entire countries are treated as the property of a few great powers." He added, "Attempts are being made to push even medium-sized states, and that includes us, to the margins of history, while small and weaker states are left completely unprotected." French President Emmanuel Macron, addressing France's diplomatic corps at the Elysee Palace on Thursday, echoed Steinmeier's warnings. "The US is an established power, but one that is gradually turning away from some of its allies and breaking free from the international rules that it was until recently promoting," Macron said. "Multilateral institutions are functioning less and less effectively. We are living in a world of great powers, with real temptation to divide up the world." The US attack on Venezuela came just weeks after the publication of the 2025 National Defense Strategy, which declared the Western Hemisphere an American sphere of influence, in which the United States would not tolerate the presence of extra-hemispheric powers. The document, released in December, identified China as the pacing threat and called for the US military to secure energy dominance through control of strategic resources in Latin America and the Middle East. The Venezuela operation is the first implementation of this doctrine. Investigative journalist Samuel Hirsch, writing on his Substack on Wednesday, reported that the objective of the Venezuela operation is to cut off China, America's economic rival, from its ongoing purchases of Venezuela's cheap, heavy crude oil. "China is the largest importer of Venezuelan oil. The next target, I've been told, will be Iran, another purveyor to China, whose crude oil reserves are the world's fourth largest," Hirsch wrote. Hirsch characterized the Venezuela operation as the opening shot in a U.S. energy war on China. On Thursday, the U.S. Senate voted 52-47 to debate a war powers resolution that would require Trump to seek congressional authorization for continued military operations in Venezuela. But the resolution will have no serious effect, as House Speaker Mike Johnson said he would not take it up. The Democratic leadership has repeatedly declared that it can do nothing to stop Trump's flagrant violations of the Constitution and international law. Those Democrats who have made mild criticisms of Trump's actions in Venezuela invariably preface their remarks with vitriolic condemnations of Maduro as a thug and a dictator, a label they do not apply to Trump, together with praise for the US military. In that vein, the House Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, said, "We're in the euphoria period of acknowledging across the board that Maduro was a bad guy, and that our military is absolutely incredible." In December, the Democratic congressional leadership joined Republicans to pass the $901 billion National Defense Authorization Act, the largest military budget in U.S. history. Minority Leader Jeffries, Minority Whip Catherine Clark, and Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar all voted in favor, providing the funding for the very military apparatus now seizing tankers, blockading Venezuela, and preparing for war with China and Iran. Trump has now called for a $1.5 trillion military budget for fiscal year 2027, a 66% increase. America must have the strongest military in the world, and it's not even close. Trump wrote on Truth Social on Monday, "We will cut the waste, but we will build the power. $1.5 trillion. According to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, this would add $5.8 trillion to the national debt over 10 years. Such a budget will require a frontal assault on the social rights of the working class, the gutting of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and every remaining social program, and a frontal attack on democratic rights." In his interview with The Times, Trump reiterated that he was willing to invoke the Insurrection Act and deploy the military inside the United States. The year 2025, when everything changed in global capitalism. By Nick Beams. Amid the continued surge on Wall Street, albeit with fluctuations, and global growth coming in as forecast at more than 3%, there are warnings that all may not be as it seems. One such warning has come from Geeta Gopinath, the former chief economist and first deputy manager of the International Monetary Fund, in the form of a comment in the Financial Times, FT, entitled, "Don't be fooled. Everything has changed." Gopinath began by noting that 2025 was a year when everything changed, as the US lifted tariffs to their highest levels in almost a century. China retaliated, and global policy uncertainty intensified. And yet global growth is projected at 3.2%, which is where it was before the turbulence began. "But it would be a mistake," she continued, "to think the global economy is unaffected by tariff fights and policy chaos, and structural damage reveals itself slowly and always too late to be reversed." She said AI spending and more expansionary fiscal policy had masked the drag from US tariffs and Chinese retaliation and had made 2025 look more stable than it actually was, and the global economy is more fragile than the headline numbers suggest, starting with fragility in the AI sector. Investors, she noted, have finally begun to question the gap between sky-high AI valuations and actual AI returns. She then made an important point about the development of AI within a capitalist economy. "This is not a statement about AI's potential, which is in all likelihood transformative. It is a statement about profitability. With competitive pressure both seen and unseen, the risk of a dot-com style correction is real." Other analysis has warned that it could be more serious than what took place a quarter century ago. This is because of the enormous growth of financial markets and their increased complexity since then. According to Gopinath, the celebrated resilience in the face of Trump's tariffs is deeply misleading, because tariffs have been costly, especially for Americans, even though some 95% of the costs have been absorbed by US firms. Tariffs have added 0.7 percentage points to inflation, and without them it could have been 2% this year. Instead, tariffs have made the typical US household $600 poorer. The damage from tariffs will grow more visible in 2026 as the resilience afforded by front-loaded imports, those brought in before the tariffs came into effect, fades, and companies pass through a higher share of costs to consumers. She also issued a warning that China's reliance on export-led growth was untenable. Its latest five-year plan, which allocated resources to technology sectors at the expense of social spending and increased domestic consumption, risks deepening structural imbalances. Gopinath concluded that the question was whether 2026 will be the year we correct course. "There is an opportunity," she said. "The US holds the G20 presidency, and France the G7 presidency. Together they can spur action to restore stability to an uncertain and increasingly fragmented global system. Under conditions where the US is acting as an imperialist gangster, tearing up all the institutions and arrangements, economic and political, of the post-war order, regarding them as inimical to its interests, and where it is even threatening military action to take over Greenland from its NATO ally Denmark, we shall leave it to the reader to draw their own conclusions about the viability of such a perspective. Longtime FT financial columnist John Plender has also issued a stark analysis of the global financial system in a major comment piece published last weekend. At the outset, amid rampant AI euphoria, crypto lunacy, credit bubbling in private markets, and the US at the heart of a global fiscal and financial maelstrom, he posed the question, does another 1929 crash loom? He found it curious that people even needed to debate whether the euphoria around AI and crypto constituted a bubble, given that they so manifestly meet all the usual bubble prerequisites. The fundamental characteristic of which was an inspirational narrative that fires up investors' expectations of super profits. Few doubted, he said, that AI would be a transformative technology leading to productivity gains, but there was huge uncertainty as to how this will come about. Another aspect of a bubble, he noted, is leverage. And while at the beginning of their investment splurge into AI, the tech giants were awash with cash, they are now starting to borrow large sums, and in the case of Amazon, Meta and Microsoft, have become net debtors. Summarising the situation, Plender concluded that there was a plausible case for a 1929-type scenario, though it was difficult to tell when the bubble would burst. But if it did take place, the central bankers would put a safety net under markets as they did in the 2007-2009 crisis. There is no question that, as Plender maintains, central banks, led by the US Fed, will pour trillions into the financial markets in the event of a crisis. But the question which then arises is whether such actions can simply continue indefinitely, or will it run into some objective limit? Some of the issues raised in his article indicate that there is such a limit, under conditions of mounting US debt, now at $38 trillion. Though he did not directly raise it, the question is whether the most indebted country in economic history can continue to be the mainstay of the global financial system. It is striking that over the past year, doubts about US Treasury securities as a safe haven has risen, he wrote, citing research which argued that the adverse reaction to Trump's Liberation Day tariffs last April may have been a harbinger in which the mighty US confronts the constraints that other debtor countries have long faced. In basic agreement with that assessment, he continued, what is clear is that US economic supremacy is very rapidly being eroded as it dismantles the post-war rules-based international order of which it was the chief architect. Instead of regarding multilateral institutions as providers of public goods, Trump and his acolytes see them as an affront to national sovereignty. The role of the dollar as the world's preeminent currency is in question, as is the US Treasury market as the world's chief provider of safe assets. US Treasuries are now clearly unsafe, given that even the Congressional Budget Office publicly declares that US government debt is on an unsustainable trajectory. The traditional argument on the dollar's role as the global reserve currency is that there is no plausible alternative, and that remained the case. But as Plender noted, the argument should be better framed, and that if global capital decides the US is unsafe, it will flow into real assets, such as gold and commodities. That has already been seen, with the price of gold, the ultimate store of value in the capitalist economy, rising by some 65% in 2025, at one point reaching as high as $4,500 per ounce. The significance of these figures is what they indicate about the devaluation of the US dollar since Nixon removed its gold backing in 1971, when the rate was $35 per ounce. There is an important ideological issue arising from the open manifestation of Trump as a spearhead of imperialist gangsterism, which applies to the analysis of the global economy. For years, decades, the ideological representatives of the ruling classes, including some pseudo-Marxists, maintained the Marxist focus on the economic driving forces of imperialism, the struggle for markets, profits and resources, as analysed by Lenin in his work Imperialism, was crude and dogmatic. The entire postmodernist school, rampant today on university campuses around the world, played an important role in this campaign. But Trump himself has now openly declared that the regime change operation in Venezuela was motivated above all by the grab for oil to benefit the US energy giants. Likewise, these same forces have for decades maintained that the Marxist analysis of the historic crisis of capitalism, leading to its breakdown as a viable socio-economic system, and the necessity, therefore, of socialism, was based on a similar crude dogmatism. But facts, as the saying goes, are stubborn things, and they are indicating that the historic contradictions of the capitalist economy are coming violently to the surface. For the working class, this means that it must base its perspective not on the ludicrous proposition advanced by figures such as Gopinath that some form of repair or course correction can be carried out, but on the understanding that the deepening crisis of capitalism, the basic driving force of war, fascism, and social devastation, must be met with the conscious political struggle for socialism. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.